The losing streak is over. The Celtics play the right way, and Jason Tatum drops 41 in three quarters. We're talking about it on the Monday Locked On Celtics podcast. Billy's, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Happy Monday. And it's a happy one for the Boston Celtics because the losing streak is over. Oh, the long nightmare is finally ended. The three-game losing streak is done. The Boston Celtics destroyed the New Orleans Pelicans on Saturday. And that's what we're going to talk about on this Monday show. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined today by Chris Grenham of Forbes Now. You've bounced around. I literally just asked you 30 seconds, and I still almost forgot.
Bounce around. That's right. Nice to speak with you, Krause. The long national nightmare is over.
Yes.
Thank God. But we are, the panic is over.
Oh my God.
We're here.
Yeah. So it took a little bit of a slump busting team like the Pelicans to, they came in, obviously no Zion still, but right. No Drew Holiday, no JJ Redick. No Derek Favors. So it was basically Brandon Ingram and their G League team. And so, but I will start with this. The Celtics have not even really done well against the G League teams of the NBA lately. So, for them to come out and put up a 41 point first quarter was actually pretty important, even against the Pelicans team, because I think their biggest problem has been like the, we're good now. We can go back to last year's, we don't have to try all the time type of attitude. So for them to come out and like drop 41 on a team where you should be dropping 41 against in a quarter, that was a good sign.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, it is, you know, for the Pelicans, this sort of was a scheduled loss. They're back to back. They were in New York the night before. Yeah. And in addition to, you know, like you said, no JJ Redick, no Drew Holiday, no Derek Favors, no Zion. They're basically playing with a completely depleted roster without multiple starters. So, yeah, it was a scheduled loss for them. They had a ton of injuries, but the Celtics still had to go out, like you said, and beat them. And they did so. And you know, they haven't always done that because you would have thought last week against Washington, that's a game where all they had to do was just go out and go through the motions and win. But then Ish Smith happened. And so, you know, it doesn't always happen. But you're right. They did what they had to do. Behind Tatum, behind Cantor. Cantor had, you know, his best game in a Celtics uniform so far. But they did what they had to do, and I think that can get overlooked. You know, sometimes the grain of salt opinion saying, yeah, it was against a depleted Pelicans roster, that can kind of like, you know, take over everything. But it is important. It was a good performance, and that should be taken away from this game as well. Obviously, anytime you put up 140 points, it's a positive thing.
Yeah. My favorite stat from this game, 100 shots. You don't see teams take 100 shots. And you know why they took 100 shots? Because they forced turnovers. And that's the only way you can get to 100 shots. Like, you can't play poorly and put up 100 shots. Like, you are defending. You're moving the ball. You're running. To get 100 shots, most teams take like 70-something, 80 maybe. So that alone, I think if you're drilling it down to one thing, that encompasses everything, because they started out the game by getting stops and getting turnovers. And, you know, going back to the effort thing and kind of mailing in efforts against bad teams, you know, so they don't have Favors and Holiday and Redick. So this is what happens when you when you play a game without those three guys. But with those three guys, this team was pretty dangerous. So that just means that somewhere in this lineup is, you know, are guys that maybe don't get opportunities. And I forget who, maybe Danny Ainge said that I loved it when Larry Bird or Kevin McHale, one of those guys, was like out for a game or two, because that just meant I got shots.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
you know.
And I think it does kind of come back to that, all leads back to the aggressiveness factor.
Yeah.
Which I think actually might have been answered one of your questions after the game. But Brad noted the aggressiveness and how important that was. And right off the tip, they were aggressive from the get-go on both sides of the ball. He said one of the things they did better was pressuring the ball, and that turns into obviously turnovers, and then they're moving the ball and aggressive on the other side. So yeah, you're right. You have to be aggressive to get to that 100 shot total, but it's not like they were just jacking shots. They were aggressive on the defensive end, aggressive with, you know, on ball pressure, got the turnovers, and then they're moving the ball really well. And they didn't move the ball well at all over that 3-game losing streak. It was a lot of stagnant half court sets where there was zero off ball movement. So it was aggression with the ball. It was aggression off the ball. And I think that just kind of, you know, started everything churning, and it was an all around good effort. But you're right, it starts with, you know, the aggressive factor for sure.
So what happens in these aggressive games when you can go out there and play the way that they played is you see guys get layups, and this was part of one of Brad's answers. You get layups, then all of a sudden the rim feels bigger. Shots go in. Yep. You get that confidence. I'm telling you, man, a lot of players, fans just don't see it from the player's perspective. And it's impossible. Like, we can barely see it from a player's perspective.
Right.
But when you're out there and you're missing a few shots, and it's all jumpers, then the way the Celtics have been playing, hold on, let me backtrack here. Two things in play here. When you're missing a bunch of shots early on, then you're like, shit, I'm missing opportunities to score.
Right.
And these are young guys, and as much as they're trying to win, but like, you don't want to have bad nights. So missing shots early is very kind of, it really is something that holds players back. You can easily go into a slump, your energy drops, your defense suffers, and all of that. Secondly, the way the Celtics have been playing with all of the jumpers that they have been taking and a lot more individual play, well, one guy is taking his shots, and then four other guys are just kind of sort of standing there. And
right.
So if that one guy misses, whoever it is, the other team gets the rebound and starts to run, they're almost like getting a half step head start. Because the other four guys are like, oh, shit, got to move. And but when you're attacking and everybody's moving, even when you're missing, everybody's got that energy. So even on the miss, you could turn and get back a little bit easier. So playing the way they did and getting out and getting those layups, it gets people going. You get 6-8 points in your stat sheet in the first quarter or early in the second quarter, then you feel good because you're like, you're pretty close to a 16 to 20 point game already.
Yeah, totally. So, and you mentioned it right when you started there. Those easy buckets are so vital in the first quarter. And Gordon Hayward, I think, says it more than anyone. He always talks about the importance early on of getting those easy buckets and getting those easy layups. And actually Saturday morning at shoot-around, he noted that. And then following the game, he said it. You know, it was important. I got a couple easy layups, and as Brad said, you know, the hoop got bigger. He was 3 of 5. He played the entire first quarter. He was 3 of 5. He had 8 points to open the game against the Pelicans, which was great for him because he hadn't been, you know, he had been kind of inconsistent lately. He had 19 points. He was 8 of 11. Nice and efficient night. But you're right. And Tatum started off 5 of 6. And you more than anyone else have pointed it out over the last couple weeks, which I think is a really good point, is that a lot of times when this team is kind of struggling in first quarters, they really just turn to Kemba, and he's the energy guy, and he's the guy they look for with those early buckets. And it was nice to see him play 7 minutes, go 1 for 2. He has 4 points, but the Celtics still are able to jump out to that big lead. That's rare. Normally when they jump out to these early leads, it's behind Kemba.
Mm-hmm.
It was behind Hayward and Tatum, which was a nice change of pace. And I think it all comes back to those easy buckets.
Yeah. And I think it was super important for it to be Hayward, especially. Yeah. Because a lot of people are putting a lot of focus on Tatum and Brown, especially. Hayward's been getting a little bit more of the heat lately. At least
he always tends to. It's kind of bizarre. He always tends to get the heat, no matter really the situation. It's a little odd, at least on Twitter.
Yeah, I know, and I have to be careful because I look at Twitter, And I have to be careful not to apply that to just general fandom, because Twitter's own little place. And I don't know.
It's a danger. It's a dangerous game when you group Twitter in as the entire fan base.
It really is not. And that's important for me to consistently remind myself.
Because we live on Twitter far too much.
We really do.
It is important for us to go outside the Twitter realm and realize there are people who don't live on there like we do. But
the fact is that Hayward, in our little world, Hayward has been getting a fair amount. And it is at least representative. It's like a poll or like the Nielsen ratings where it's one person representing whatever. But exactly. So Hayward, look, it's because he gets paid what he gets paid. And he can't help that he broke his ankle. He can't help that last year happened and all of that. Like, this is his first fully healthy year with the Celtics, and so he's still trying to figure a few things out. So there are a lot of things that are not his fault. There are some things that he should be better at, but getting out there and getting the easy buckets, really, if anything here, this game was just a little bit of a victory lap for people like me who are like, don't go crazy. All it is mostly effort. This is mostly effort. And if they can put forth the right effort, they'll be okay. And they did. Right. And like, this is exactly what a good team should do to a bad team.
Yeah. And those effort lulls, I mean, I know it's annoying to say it and to vocalize, but those effort lulls and lulls of really any sort, they happen over a long season.
Right.
You know, they're bound to happen. And the Celtics just happen to hit their first one. And similar to, you know, Jaylen Brown's play over the last week or so, it's going to regress, like the Celtics team performance. It's got to come back to earth a little bit. And this was, you know, sort of part of it. Maybe it wasn't as pleasant or as easy of a come down as people would have liked, but it was bound to happen, at least for a short stretch. And it did. But, you know, it was nice to see him kind of bounce back a little bit.
I mean, look, we're so hyper focused on the Celtics. The Miami Heat, as we record this on Sunday night, lost to the New York Knicks, and they gave up 40 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
lose to the New York Knicks. And on Saturday, who had the bad loss on Saturday? Cleveland beat Denver. Cleveland went to Denver and beat the Nuggets. So
yeah, there you go. And the Jazz recently, they lost to the Wizards. I mean, the Wizards are taking everybody down right now, but the Jazz lost to the Wizards. So you're right. It's not just the Celtics that fall into this lull.
Right. The world of sports is not good teams always beat bad teams.
Exactly.
And so, all right. So we have not talked about Jason Tatum, and specifically saving him for a much larger conversation, which we're going to do after the break. Stick around for more Locked On Celtics next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Being on the Celtics beat, it's busy. It takes a lot of time. It's very hard to stay in shape. I'm constantly like trying to get into hotel gyms and trying to find my way to a crowded gym somewhere. But there's a better way. And to get fit in 2020, you don't have to do that or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in shape for your life is with Echelon. You can go to echelonfit.com, that's E-C-H-E-L-O-N, echelonfit.com, to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. You know, those Peloton things are all over the place. Don't bother with that. Get yourself the Echelon. It makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, busy moms and dads, first responders, elite athletes, everybody, no matter what your activity level. And with daily live and on-demand studio classes right in your home, you'll never leave or have to set foot in a gym. You're going to love Echelon, but if you're not 100% satisfied, you get your money back. So join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. Don't pay a ton for Peloton. Buy Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's echelon fit.com. echelonfit.com/LONBA, echelonfit.com/LONBA. Jason Tatum had to go to those guys. He was on his bike in this game, starting out the whole game. 11 points, not the whole game. He didn't play in the fourth quarter.
That's true, actually. That would have been the whole game.
The 11 points in the first, 11 points in the second, 19 in the third for a career best 41 points in just 30 minutes. And he hit, 73% of his shots?
Yeah, 16 to 22. That's nice and efficient. Love that.
Yeah. And again, how did he do it? Couple of layups. First play of the game, Jaylen Brown gets a steal, gets out in transition, Tatum gets a layup. Those yep. types of plays, he wasn't forcing it. You saw him moving the ball. You saw him make the extra pass. And again, a chance for a victory lap for the level-headedness. The go out there, play the right way, move the ball. It will find the right energy. I'm the biggest believer in this. I say it every goddamn podcast. Move the ball. If everybody, all five guys, are playing the right way and the ball moves, then the defense will break down and an open guy will get the ball. And it's going to be a different guy from possession to possession. You will get enough touches that when you're going and you're hot, then you can all of a sudden put up a big night. Tatum right. took 22 shots. That's not egregious. 22 right. shots, and he had himself a good night. Gordon Hayward hit 8 of 11 for 19 points. That's a good night. So, but obviously Tatum's not going to shoot 73%, but like going out, playing the right way, the reason he went 6 for 9 from 3 was because he was comfortable, he was getting shots in rhythm, and he wasn't really forcing them.
Yeah, that ball's moving around, and it'll find the hot hand. It always does, and it doesn't matter what the defense is throwing at you. If there's off-ball movement, if the ball is crisp, it's swiftly moving, it'll find him. It always does. Like, the Pelicans started in a zone early on. Celtics torched it. They switched back to me. It didn't matter. The entire game, the ball was moving well, and it continued to find him. What you noted about him only taking 22 shots, it's not egregious at all. He took 20 against the Wizards last week and had 17 points. He took two more shots and had 41 points against the Pelicans. So, you know, that's a complete result of the off-ball movement, of the crisp ball movement, because you saw it against the Wizards. Like, there was a lot of stagnant play in D.C. Like, it was not pretty at all. But it comes back to the aggression, and like we talked about in the first segment, those easy buckets early, they see the ball go in, it gets that nice flow moving, and it starts things off on the right foot. So between the nice start with the easy buckets, the ball movement throughout the game, it found Tatum, and God, he was on fire. It was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome to watch.
It's such a good feeling when you're on the floor to get easy buckets. And yeah. I don't know if anybody, like, if you really understand when you're playing, and this is where I can use my experience a little bit, is when you get out there and you're running and you get a couple of layups, man, like, you instantly have a little bit of a game cooking. Like I said, 11 points in the first quarter, there's an extra bounce in your step. And like, that matters. That attitude, that confidence to get out there and feel good about yourself, it matters a lot. Tatum didn't take a three in the first quarter, shot 5 of 6 and hit a free throw. So no threes in the first quarter, and he was already on his way to an 11-point game. Then all of a sudden, because he was driving, because he was aggressive, the shots started to open up. Second quarter, 3 of 4 from three, only one non-three in that quarter for an 11-point quarter. That's how aggression opens things up. You feel good about yourself. The defense reacts. All of a sudden, now you become like a boxer setting up jab, jab, jab. All of a sudden, here come the hooks. Boom. And you're throwing right. the haymakers. That's how these big games happen, generally speaking, especially for young guys like Tatum, who are still figuring out what they can do, who they can be. Like, those types of things, that matters. Now, conversely, Jaylen Brown was attacking. I think Jaylen Brown got caught up in not getting foul calls.
Yeah.
He was equally aggressive, but he wasn't finishing. And I think that was like a good dichotomy of one guy saw the ball going in and felt good about himself. The other guy was frustrated by non-calls, and he struggled a bit in that night. I think those are two good examples of how nights can go when shots are falling and when you're aggressive and you're finishing versus the other.
No, totally. And I think this is, for me, I think it's a little more apparent with Tatum than other guys. On New Year's Eve in Charlotte, he was 5 for 5 in the first quarter, 13 points. He ends up with a solid game. He had, I think, like 20. I don't know what he ended up with. Let's see here. 24. So he finishes with 24. He had 28 against Chicago. He was a perfect 3 of 3 in the first quarter. So, you know, he gets those quick starts and he takes off. He gets off to a rough start, like in D.C., when he was like 8 of 20. He only had 2 points in the first quarter. He played 7 choppy minutes. He was 1 of 3 from the field. So for him, for a younger guy, and granted that's assumed, you know, a younger guy is more, I don't want to say susceptible to the game flow, but especially his individual, that's just kind of the way it goes. It's just a younger player. So I think you're 100% right. Tatum and guys like Jaylen Brown, the younger guys are more susceptible to, hey, if the ball's going in early, there's a couple easy buckets I get going, the rest of the game is going to continue that way. If I'm choppy at first and like JB, I'm having some trouble with foul calls, whatever it may be, that could set the tone for the rest of the game. And it is very clear that that's the case with Tatum. And he was aggressive. Like you said, he didn't take a single three and he still had 11 points in the first quarter in 9 minutes. Like, that's tremendous to see. Yeah, of course he could still finish at the rim a little bit better, but he was okay at the rim, against the Pelicans, better than he has been over the last, obviously the 3-game losing streak, but I mean, that aggression and him putting the ball on the floor and getting to the hoop is nice.
The other thing, with Tatum, I have to acknowledge his defense. The last time he set a career high, which was what, 39, I believe.
Yeah.
One of my questions after the game.
Yeah, it was 39 against the Hornets, yeah.
Yeah, one of my questions after the game with Brad was like, hey, by the way, his defense was pretty good, and Brad kind of gushed about that. And I was going to do the same, and I'm like, wait a minute. I don't want to be like typecast. Is like, hey, every time Tatum has a big game, I got to ask about the defense.
Tatum goes for 35+. Corrales has got to ask about his defense.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, hey, look, he was out there and he had 3 steals and 4 deflections in the game. So, getting out there, getting tips, and when Tatum steals the ball, it's almost always almost like a pick six type of defensive back. You know, he's always in the passing lane. He's picking off a pass and he's going the other way for a layup. So it's not just like he's ripping guys like Jaylen Brown. Despite his struggles shooting, I thought he had a pretty good defensive game as well. I don't know how many steals he had, but
he had 3 steals as well. So
okay, so there you go. Yeah. So like, I think they both had really good defensive games. Jaylen's steals, I think, were more like straight up defending poke away.
Right.
But Tatum was like picking off passes and going. And the deflections, like I said, the 4 deflections are just as important because they're disruptive. I mean, that all kind of plays into everything. So, like I said at the beginning of the show, you don't put up 100 shots without getting steals and getting out into transition. We'll be right back. We're going to wrap up the show. A couple more loose ends to tie up when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Jaylen Brown is officially in a slump. I mean, he is. I'm looking at his numbers here. They're not great over the past 4 games. 4 of 15 against New Orleans, 2 of 12 against Philly, 5 of 14 against San Antonio, 7 of 22 against Washington. So he's got 4 games of shooting I don't even know. I didn't even do the math. It's bad. It's like 30%.
It's not good. It's not like 30%. What we'd call good. Yeah. He's slumping for sure.
So he is 2, 4, 6, 7 of 24 from three in that time. So that's a little more than 25%. So, maybe a bit of regression to the mean for Jalen, you think?
Bound to happen. Yeah. I mean, kind of what we talked about in the first segment, it's a little steeper than you'd like. You'd like a more gradual regression. This is a bit dramatic, but it was bound to happen, you know, at some point. He was on a torrid pace through December, for a couple games there. But yeah, I think it's a regression to the mean. I don't think it's any reason to panic per se, similar to the three game losing streak. We'll see how this next week goes. You know, if this continues, then maybe you start to wonder if December was a flash in the pan sort of thing, but I think it's just a regression, and I don't think it's anything to panic over just yet.
Yeah. Look, the December, the numbers were ridiculous in December.
It was insane. I mean, like, yeah.
56% shooting overall, 44% from three, and about 78% from the line. Unheard of numbers.
Just not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. It's not a knock on Jalen. That's not sustainable for basically anybody.
Yeah.
And if that's something that he did sustain, then not only was I wrong about him before, like everybody was wrong. Cause that's megastar type of number. So
everyone was wrong. He was wrong.
Yeah. But his January in six games. So this includes a couple of good games. He's still shooting 37% in January, 35.5% from three, just about 83% from the line. So at least the free throw shooting is there. And that's important. Positive. That's super, super important. One of my things with Marcus Smart over the years has been he's a good free throw shooter. That 3-point shooting is going to come around because good free throw shooters, they can't stay cold for long. The form is there. So I think Jalen needs to if I'm Brad Stevens, I'm running a couple of plays off the bat against Chicago Monday night for Jalen Brown. Let's get this kid get him an alley-oop, get him something going to the basket.
Yeah.
Do
get
something.
Him some touches early.
Yeah. Let's get this kid going because we're going to need him going. I'm not worried. Like Tatum runs hot and cold, but Tatum doesn't seem to get too caught up in it. Kemba's Kemba and Hayward, I think, is enough of a pro where you can tell after it was nice to get to make these shots, but I don't get too worried about it. I think Jalen, I would run a couple of plays for him and see if you can't get him a solid 8 or 10 point first quarter and maybe it's almost like a his turn kind of thing that's going on. At least just get him a little bit of confidence early on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Hayward is the epitome of, you know, as he always says, you don't get too high on the highs, too low on the lows. That good old saying that he said 400 times over the last, you know, 2 years. But I think you're right. I think Jalen Brown might get caught up in that a little more. And he's, you know, Gordon Hayward's been in the league a hell of a lot longer than Jalen Brown. So that's understandable. But you're right. You might want to look to get him a couple touches early and to help him maybe just get on the right track, not necessarily force him to break out of this. You're not, you know, forcing the ball to him, but just get him on the right foot, you know, just get him going back in the right direction. That could certainly help. And I think that would help overall, because on certain nights when, you know, Kemba's going and no one else really is, you need one other guy to kind of be going alongside of him. Yeah. And it's nice to be able to turn to him, you know, and lately they haven't been able to do so.
So I'm not really worried about Jalen. I think you'll be fine. You mentioned Enes Kanter before. It's the most overlooked 22-19 game in history.
It really is.
But he had, 7 offensive rebounds. So much so that Brad Stevens was joking after the game, like, yeah, you know, putting him up and getting his own offensive rebounds to pad his stats.
I thought that was pretty. There were Moses Malone comparisons in the post game scrum.
Yes, I mean that's pretty hilarious.
That's great. Yeah, considering that we had Moses Malone mentioned post game and a Deuce appearance, Yesterday's post game might have been the best all year. That's, I mean, my God,
it was pretty high level. You know what? That's a good point. It's pretty high level. We haven't had a lot of that. As much as everybody is happy to have last year's drama passed, this year's scrums, because of like the lack of tension.
Yeah.
Like for
there's no Mook Spice. Like, right. There's no, yeah. Yeah.
It's been a lot of like quiet cliche, just spewing like,
yeah, a lot of Bill Belichick talk in there, you know, and that's not fun. I want Mook coming in there and just firing off some lines and all of us, you know, standing there looking at each other like, oh man, this is going to be great to transcribe.
Right. Thank God for Marcus Smart. Yeah. Marcus Smart's the only one that drops some heat sometimes. But like Gordon Hayward's never going to say anything. Like he's just never going to give you anything. Kemba is, he's great. In like, I sit down and have conversations with him, and first of all, he's great at being available, but like, he's not going to say a ton in those either.
He's
like,
a pro in that sense. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
He knows exactly. Yeah. Tatum's just very quiet. Brown will say some things once in a while, but he's got his own script that he sticks to. Not that I'm advocating for any drama. I don't want drama. I just would like every once in a while for some juicy quotes, like Evan Turner type stuff. Just somebody to be like, you know, Robert Williams being hurt. There, you know? Robert Williams being hurt really puts a damper on this, because Robert Williams is another guy that when things are going good, when things are going, whatever it is, like he's going to give you some money quotes. So
when he's loose up there, it's awesome. Yes. It just rolls off the tongue. It's great. Yeah. I did enjoy Deuce coming in there yesterday, because that was like a little life. It was just something different, which was tremendous. And hearing Javonte Green call him a future Hall of Famer was also that was tremendous as well. But yeah, I agree. A little no drama, but you know, a little juice. A little juice here and there would be nice, you know.
How funny would that be? I mean, I hope I'm like 85 or something like that, and like Deuce Tatum at that point would be like 45 and like, yo, just elected to the Hall of Fame. Like that would be
just elected to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. I mean, like, you'll be remembering. When Javonte Green called that.
Yeah. Like you were like 2 years old. You tried to eat a microphone. Javonte Green said, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God. That would be great. So Cantor had himself a very nice game. Look, he is who he is. He's going to have his bad nights. I feel like every time I mention Cantor, there is a segment you mentioned before, like on Twitter, there's a segment of people on Twitter that just absolutely despise Enes Cantor. And just every time he has a bad, like does something bad, they're like, get him out of here.
Jump.
I can't.
They jump.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it's visceral reaction.
It's brutal.
I get it.
He's not great on defense. Like,
no, of course not.
Everyone knew that when he signed with the Celtics, but he's undeniably useful in offensive situations for the most part. Like last night, he was tremendous moving off the ball when they were torching the Pelicans zone. There's not a lot of bigs who can move like that, and he's great at finishing at the rim. So for him to just be sitting underneath, waiting for that last pass, like that's useful. I don't care if he's, you know, iffy on defense on occasion, to put it politely, you know?
Right.
He's useful.
When the Celtics, if the Celtics can get fully healthy, they can manage that. There can be more Cantor DNPs in those situations. Like right now, he has to play because they're down Robert Williams.
What other choice do they have?
They don't have Poirier. I love Grant Williams, but he fouled out in 13 minutes last night. Like that.
What
I mean,
a beautiful line. What a beautiful line.
An epic performance.
It's tremendous.
But Daniel Theis has a sore right knee. Like he's questionable for the Bulls game. So Cantor has to play. So yeah, he's gonna get torched on pick and rolls. Ish Smith switching on to Enes Kanter is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And so go ahead and scream all you want when that happens, but like, just accept, like, all right, he's going to get torched. But on the other side, he does the things that you said, and he's putting back offensive rebounds, and he's really crushing the offensive boards this year. Like that, they had that one zone busting play that I just got crazy over on Twitter where it was perfectly just dissected, and he was behind the
Yeah, was it the one where Hayward dropped it to him?
Yep.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
perfect. That's exactly, everybody was exactly where they were supposed to be. The ball got to the middle. The big kind of lays back. I remember when I was playing against the zone, I would even stand out of bounds. I was, my
you
foot was on the
back as far out of the play as you can.
Just forget about me. Yep. Let those guys get into the gaps, and then I'll step right in and catch that dump down. And it's easy money. Bigs can get 20 points a game if you're playing zone like that.
Yeah, it's perfect. If the big can kind of creep back like that, the zone then starts to creep up high because the big is just nowhere to be found, and all of a sudden he's alone underneath.
Yeah, it's, it was perfect.
Yeah.
My favorite play from Cantor went, I think, mostly unnoticed. There was a play in the, second quarter maybe, where Jaylen Brown called for an Enes Kanter pick. And I swear, I didn't ask Jaylen about it, but I swear it was just to get him out of the lane because he was on the right block and he called for the pick and Enes was like halfway up the lane and then
he just takes off.
Jaylen just took off and drove. And I was like, that's hilarious because that's one of the downsides of Kanter is that he clogs the lane sometimes because he's standing on the block. So you like Jaylen was like, I got to get him out of there.
Yeah. Jaylen's like, I can dribble now. You can't be down there, man.
Right. But also Jaylen missed and Kanter put back the miss that just kind of, I don't know. I didn't notice that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was really funny to me when he did that. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. That was really slick. Yeah, come on, set the pick. Bye.
Yeah, see ya. But he's there to clean up.
That's his job. Yeah. That's his job. Yeah. All right. Well, that's everything I've got. And we're just about out of time. So, Chris, thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, of course. I'll see you tomorrow at Shoot Around and at the Garden.
Yes. These long days. Shoot Around. And then the game. But Celtics, Bulls. So stick around. There will be a post-game podcast after that. All of you new listeners, go ahead and give that subscribe button a push. Please get this thing to your device as soon as it is published. And the regular listeners, 5-star rating and a good written review. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.